Hey, everybody. This is Doug Robertson of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution with another edition of the Southern Fried Soccer Podcast. It is March 15th, and on Sunday, Atlanta United will host Orlando at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. It is Atlanta United's, or it will be, Atlanta United's third match of the year. It'll be the fourth for Orlando, which is yet to win in the league this season. As always, you can follow my coverage on Twitter at DougRobertsonAJC or on Facebook at Atlanta United News Now. The broadcast this weekend, all of the MLS games are going to be free on Apple TV. So if you haven't paid for the MLS season pass, but you want to watch the game, you can. In this podcast, you're going to hear from Dax McCarty. You're going to hear from John De Silva. You're going to hear from manager Gonzalo Pineda. You're going to hear from center back Steen Gregerson. You're going to hear my interview with Jake Zivin, who's going to be handling the play-by-play on Sunday's match along with Taylor Twellman. I'm going to answer your questions about the team, and then we're going to read some feedback from the story that appeared in Thursday's paper about the best moves made with the Atlanta United front office or by the Atlanta United front office. Next week's rankings, which will be in Thursday's paper, Wednesday online, is going to be other professional athletes who have either from Atlanta or played on Atlanta teams who would make good soccer players. And I've had a lot of fun with that. If this is your first time listening to us, please make sure to follow the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so that you never miss an episode. This is Southern Fried Soccer from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Ocean breeze, tropical beach, piña colada. You can buy an air freshener to make your car smell like you're in an oceanside paradise. Or, better yet, you can point your car toward Daytona Beach and come experience the real thing. Visit DaytonaBeach.com to discover all there is to see, do, and enjoy along the world's most famous beach, Daytona Beach, Florida. Beach on.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
As I have explained in the past, usually when Atlanta United matches are on Saturday, we have availability on Tuesdays and Thursdays. This week, because the match is on Sunday, availability was Tuesday and Friday. So on Tuesday, we spoke with Dax McCarty and John De Silva. He spoke to us for a few minutes before he was hosting the barbecue that he and Tristan have had two of the past 3 weeks now for the team. Here's Dax McCarty on how he thinks he did in his debut. He came on and played the final few minutes of the 4-1 win against New England.
I'd give it a B minus.
Okay.
You know, I wasn't on the field long, but you know, we were doing a lot of defending, so the goal at that point is to just try to you know, see the game out, stay in a good shape, and help the back line you know, see the game out. I knew I was going to go in, and then they scored. So I was frustrated for Brad and for our defenders who had put a really, really good shift in, and I was hoping we could get Brad his first shutout of the season. So hats off to Carlos Hill. I mean, it was a great finish. So, yeah, but, I mean, honestly, for me, it's more about just getting on the field and getting some first competitive minutes for the team. Felt great, even if it was a short amount of time. You know, the atmosphere in the stadium was just electric. And so to be able to step on the field and represent the club for the first time, I mean, it's great, you know? You only make your sixth debut for a new club one time. So that's what I did.
Now, that veteran presence in the midfield, that guy that can help the team see out results, that's something they were hoping to get from Ozzie Alonso. But combination of Atlanta United not winning a lot at least 2 years ago, and Ozzie's injuries really prevented that from happening. So I was curious if this was going to be McCarty's role, if he'd been told that by manager Gonzalo Pineda.
It was just to enjoy it, you know, to make sure that we keep a good shape, and to make sure that, you know, we keep things tight. I think a big emphasis for us this whole year is going to be the better we can defend, the more compact we can be, the more times we can keep goals from, you know, going into our own net. the better off we're going to be, because as you saw, our attacking players are quite dangerous, and they don't need many chances to bury a team. So that first 10-15 minutes of the second half, I mean, it was just incredible. It was fun to watch, honestly. And you know, as a player on the bench, you're itching to get in and be a part of that. So the message, I think, is very consistent. Let's use our attacking players to be a fun team to watch, to score goals, and then on the flip side of it, you know, let's concede less goals than we did last year.
Now, Atlanta United defeated New England 4-1. It was up 4-0 when New England scored its goal. It came off a set piece. Some of us were talking in the press box after the game about a team being able to maintain focus for 90 minutes. And it doesn't seem to me like it would be that big of a challenge, but some other people disagreed and said they thought that it could be a challenge. So I wanted to know from Dax McCarty, who's, I think, in his 20th year in the league now, is what it feels like, on if it's possible for a team to stay focused for 90 minutes.
I don't think it's impossible, but it's very difficult, okay, especially when you have all 11 guys who are going to, you know, try to be locked in for the entire 90 minutes. That's difficult. And then you add onto that a team with a league that has, you know, incredibly talented attacking players that are trying to not allow you, you know, to get a clean sheet. So players like that are going to make great plays, right? I'm sure New England was feeling pretty good about themselves until one of the best strikers in the league decided to take over the game. You know, that's what happens. That can happen in soccer. So it's not easy. But again, the play where they scored is a set piece. And so that's, I think, the frustrating thing, is that we can absolutely be more tuned in. We can be more sharp. We can be a little bit more aware of what's going on, so a player like that doesn't get in a position to score a great goal, right? Because we all know he's a former MVP. He's got a great left foot, and you know that's what they can do if you let him get into positions like that. So I think it's a good lesson for us. The Columbus one was difficult because it came in a loss. This one, you know, we're 4-0 up, and so I think there's a tendency when you're 4-0 up to, you know, maybe take some plays off, which I'm not saying that's what we did, but yeah, there's a little bit of lack of awareness going on that our whole team can learn from that.
John De Silva was next up, and I was curious what he's learned about this team in their first two matches.
The first game, we learned that we had to do better, you know? We had to do better, focus, in some important aspects, but, on us, no, on the opponent, you know? And, yeah, that's what we did for the second game. We focused more on us. For sure, we can do much better. We can do much better, and we're just warming up. And yeah, we focus on us, and we did what the coach say. And yeah, that's why we keep going. And as I said, we can do better, and we're gonna do much better. We're just warming up.
And here's Zonda on the defensive improvements for this year compared to what he experienced when he came in the summer window last year.
More solid, of course. More solid. As I said before, I think if we defend good, we attack better. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to defend good, to try to score more goals, and try to be more efficient.
Today's bad weather drove Atlanta United off the pitch and into film study and stuff today, because it was too difficult to try to train in. So we spoke with Pineda and Stien in the lobby of the training center. I was curious to ask Gonzalo, how does the team keep the momentum going against Orlando on Sunday?
For me, just keep the energy high, and be a bit sharper when we are in possession of the ball. I think those two things are important, but the energy that they apply the last game was amazing, and we need very similar energy for this game against Orlando.
And then you heard him say they want to be sharper with the ball, and I was hoping he could provide a little more insight into that.
I think progressing the ball better and more often, okay, come back to front, and then once we're in the final third, the decision making, the technical ability to impact a little bit more in the final third. I think the last game we could have done much better. So that's what I mean, being more consistent in the way we play.
Of course, the Purple Lions under Oscar Pereja also want to control the ball. So how do both teams try to handle that?
That's the fight, right? Want to compete for the ball. You want to press high. You want to be very intense when you are out of possession. So you regain the ball as soon as possible. Then you start your attacking sequence. So yeah, that will be the balance that we should have. Good in attack, good in defense, and then hopefully we can have more to control of the ball.
Orlando was eliminated in the Champions League on Tuesday. Last week, Atlanta United played New England, which was in the Champions League. It got eliminated last night. I was curious if Pineda thought there was any way Atlanta United could take advantage of Orlando perhaps not being in the best physical shape for Sunday.
I mean, it can go both ways. Maybe they are a bit sharper, more in rhythm, more, you know, ready to play. We'll be probably fresher than them. So who knows? It's a long debate. I prefer to think that they're going to be at their very best, and we have to do the same.
And he's also wanted to know from Pineda how Steen has looked so far.
I think pretty good. I think he's been growing in his confidence. We know the characteristics that he has. He's a very good player, and I think you will start to see better and better from him. And I'm actually excited about his level once he's with the full integration in the system and how to play out from the back, how to defend collectively. I think he's going to be a fantastic, fantastic player for us.
And how it might be able to take advantage of Orlando missing Cartagena, who got a red card like 10 minutes after last week's match.
Yeah, he took a red card at the end of the last game against Minnesota, a little mass confrontation there. And Araujo, we don't know whether he's going to be healthy or not. So I think those are very good players for them. But what I know about Pareja's teams is they're always competitive, whether it was Dallas, Tijuana, Orlando. They're always teams that whoever plays is going to do their very best for 90 plus minutes and to fight and to compete. So yeah, they will have some absences maybe. I cannot rely on that. I expect again the best Orlando, and they will figure it out. They're a very competitive side. It's a derby, so they're gonna compete, and we have to be up to that standard.
Gregerson, this was his first two matches with Atlanta United. He of course came in the winter window in January from Bordeaux in France. Here he is talking about how he thinks he's done the first two matches.
I think I'm doing okay. Of course, I could do better. Everybody can do better. And yeah, we're working on it every day on the pitch. And yeah, the last game was good. The result was very good. But of course, we could do better.
And here he is talking about his partnership with Derek Williams.
Very good. And of course, we can do better there also. It's very early. We need a better chemistry with me and Derek and with the Brooks also to know each other better.
Right.
But it's better from the first game.
All right. When we come back, I'm going to read your questions and hopefully provide you some good answers. This is Southern Fried Soccer from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Ocean breeze, tropical beach. An air freshener can make your car smell like paradise. A drive to Daytona Beach will actually get you there. Beach on. Plan your trip today at DaytonaBeach.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We're excited to announce a great deal for a greater Atlanta. For a limited time, subscribe to the AJC and you'll get digital access for just $1.99 per week for life. And I hope you live a long life. As long as you keep your subscription, you have access to the substance and soul of the South, including breaking news and in-depth investigations, food, sports, business, and more from AJC.com every day for the rest of your life. Subscribe now by going to AJC.com/start. That's AJC.com/start to take advantage of the South's biggest deal. This is for new subscribers only. On to the mailbag. First, a coffee sip. That's a good cup of Joe. Nick, friend of the podcast, says, you mentioned on one of the recent pods about the club's leadership council. Could you elaborate on that? Who's on it and what are their responsibilities? So got to speak with Pineda a little bit about this off camera today. And this is something he's had kind of informally for the past couple of years. And he said he would call it when there were things that weren't going well that he wanted to talk to some of the team leaders about. This year, he decided to schedule them and really to be more proactive, to talk about things that are going well, things that aren't going well, both from the player's viewpoint as from his viewpoint. It includes a lot of different players from a lot of different cultures because he wants the locker room to be represented on this council. It's mostly veterans. He said he thinks it's going pretty well so far. They've already got next month's meeting scheduled. They had one, I think it was the Friday before the Columbus, or maybe during the bye week there was one. He said they usually take 90 minutes to about 2 hours as they just talk about things upcoming. He said it's something that he learned from Brian Schmetzer in Seattle, who also had a version of this. So, you know, he said unofficially Brad was kind of one of the guys on the leadership council. It's the veterans. It's the guys that I think you would probably expect to be on there. I assume Brad is on there. I would assume Dax is on there. Brooks, who wants to be a team leader, is on there. Yorgos would be on there. Maybe Luis Abram, a veteran from South America, would be on there. But that's kind of the makeup of it. Jim says backup striker has been a deficiency for this team going way back, or what counts as way back for a franchise with such a brief history. We're looking at some matches without Yorgos Giakoumakis. What do you think we can anticipate from Jamal Tiari? Spurts of production like we got from Dom Dwyer, Kubo levels of void, might better service than those two, and Cisneros and Conway and John, if they had gotten that, would that have made a difference? Must the anticipated goal-scoring drop-off when Gigi isn't here be an actual nosedive? Thanks for your good work. Well, most MLS teams don't have good backup strikers. It's simply you're a salary cap league. If strikers are scoring goals, they're getting paid. And if they're getting paid and they're not the starter, they're probably not going to be in Major League Soccer. So there are several players that are getting called up to national teams, which means they're not going to be available for the Toronto match. Yorgos Giakoumakis is one. Caleb Wiley is another. Luis Abram is another. Bartok is another. Thiago might be another. They have not announced their roster yet. And there's one more that I'm forgetting about. But, you know, everything for a striker does depend upon service. If they can't get the ball in the box, chances are they're not going to score. And, you know, service has been a problem in past years, or it's just bad luck. Kubo would get into good spots, would get the ball, and just couldn't score. John was not getting the type of service that he needed. We'll see about Jamal. We know from watching Jamal last season and getting to watch him this preseason, he will throw his body around like a crazy person. And that's meant as a compliment. So he will be rough. He will throw himself around. His holdup play is better than I thought, considering he's not as big as Yorgos. But it's a chance for him to kind of, make a claim and say, look, you could bring me on. I can get goals. Michael says, I'll admit that I don't watch all that many MLS matches, but from what I've seen so far, I feel like the officiating has been better this year than it has been in a while. Maybe I'm off base here, or maybe it's just a small sample size. But if so, that doesn't exactly help the bargaining position of the MLS referees. What is your opinion of MLS officiating thus far this season? Do you think the performance of the replacement officials will lead to any significant changes once an agreement is reached? Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I haven't really noticed the officials, and that's been a good thing. There's been, to my mind that I've read, one egregious call that happened with a throw-in in a Philadelphia game. I don't mind that there are more reviews in games, maybe, than with with these replacement refs than with the professional referee organization refs or the PRSA refs. That's what it's there for. It's to get calls right, and it seems like most of the time they're getting calls right. So I don't mind more reviews. Do I wish that Major League Soccer / PRO and the PRSA could come to an agreement so the referees can get their jobs back? Yes, I do. And I hope it's an agreement that is good for both sides. You don't ever want to see strikes. You don't ever want to see lockouts. In this case, this was a lockout. So hopefully they'll come to an agreement soon. But the referees that are being used now, I would not mind seeing some of them get promoted and used by Major League Soccer. Michael continues, I really enjoyed the first of your ranking series. I was surprised that the majority of the list was personnel in the front office rather than on the field. Not what I expected, which made it an interesting read. Looking forward to the next one. Thanks, man. Now on to our question of the week. It's a little bit longer, but it's very good, and it's a little curtain pull backer. So let me take a coffee sip. And here we go. It says, recently, Cincinnati suspended Laurel Pfaffler's credentials. The club claims she violated journalistic ethics and MLS credential guidelines. She indicated the club told her that she had contacted sources outside of the facility or team-approved interviews on three occasions. I know there are limitations around the facilities and games, but thought it was fair game for journalists to talk to sources outside the facility if they agree to talk. So if you're not familiar with this, you could find it on social media where it's being played out, which is never what you want to do. The club has issued a statement about Laurel. This came after it looks like a Cincinnati Inquirer columnist, based upon the timeline, on the social media timeline, wrote a column defending Laurel. The club then issued its statement. Laurel then came back with her own statement. So here are my thoughts on this. Yes, it is fair game for journalists to talk to sources outside the facility if they agree to talk. Now, by that, I don't mean we're standing in the parking lot waiting on players. I mean, you know, if a player wants to give you their phone number and you talk to them, then that is fair game. Same for any member of the front office, same for any member of the league, same for any of the agents, anything like that. That is all fair game. How is the relationship between MLS teams and the media the same or different than other professional sports leagues? The questions continue. There's no difference. It's just, it's a smaller pack for the most part. You know, I've been a little bit stunned that we've had three of the local TV networks show up at the first few training sessions, because usually as the season goes, those guys drop off one by one until there's usually only one who consistently comes. And then every once in a while, you'll see two or three show up for big games or games that were on national TV. So, you know, smaller packs leads to shorter press conferences. It's the benefit is if you're a beat reporter, well, then you get most of the news involving the team. The downside is, you know, you can't always think of everything. You can't always ask every question that should be asked because, you know, it's only one brain. So in some of that way, I miss having more people there. With the team today, I was the only, in terms of like reporters, the only unaffiliated one there. Other people have other jobs. I get that. But it just can make for a shorter press conference. This whole thing is awful for a whole lot of reasons. I don't ever want to see a journalist get their credential pulled unless they've done something egregious like, you know, slander, libel, be over the top confrontational in a press conference or with a player, consistently misquote somebody or consistently get the context wrong in stories. Even then, it would have to be pretty egregious, I would think, for their credential to be pulled. I don't know all the details. I don't know if there are details that we're missing, which I'm sure there are, because it's Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it. You're not going to get all the information on a medium that is designed to limit information. So I hope that, like the strike or the lockout, that this gets resolved soon. Laurel's been on the beat from day one. She has her own website. This is, you know, a labor of love. This is her occupation, her job. So I'm hoping that all this can get resolved very, very soon. And what's funny to me about this, or funny is not the right word, but you understand what I mean, is that you have agents that give certain people across all the beats, there are certain, all the information about contracts and personnel and players. And there's never any repercussion for that. And the teams hate it. I assume the league doesn't like it much either. But there are no repercussions for that. But this, there are repercussions for. It's a weird situation. And then he continues, finally, with Atlanta United, do you have similar limitations? Now, Atlanta United has never actively tried to limit my reporting. I've never gotten scolded for anything. I got rightfully scolded one time because I asked a question that was meant to be funny and it did not come across as funny. And that was on me. But anyway, so no, you know, people I see on Twitter, well, if you write something critical, you'll get your credential pulled. No, that's not how it works. if you say something mean about Gonzalo Pineda, he won't talk to you anymore. That's not how it works. And I've said what I guess you would consider mean things about Pineda, but they were professional because I also included facts and reasoning rather than just saying something silly. Same for some of the players. And even if I am critical, I also try to be balanced, which is my job, by pointing out the positives too. So no, nothing like that has ever happened with me at Atlanta United or anything that I've ever covered before. Georgia Tech, Kennesaw State, Georgia State, Petrie Road Race, National Championship games in football, Peach Bowl, Chick-fil-A kickoff game. I mean, anything. Never happened before. You're going to get to hear me talk to Jake Zibben. He was at home in Portland earlier this week. We connected via Zoom. Really good guy. Really good play-by-play guy. If you're not coming to the stadium on Sunday, I hope that you'll watch it on Apple. Listen to Jake. Listen to Taylor, two of my favorites, favorite partnerships among the broadcasters on MLS. Here is Jake talking about Atlanta United versus Orlando. So, Jake, you were here last week when Atlanta United dismantled New England.
Yeah.
What did you see in that game that gives you some degree of confidence that this is a different Atlanta United squad from maybe the past couple of years?
Yeah, it's interesting, right? The four is not different, right? I mean, Atlanta was second in Major League Soccer last year in goals scored, and specifically at home. I mean, it was, to me, a typical Atlanta United Mercedes-Benz game where they get up and then they keep going, and it's just kind of the floodgates open, and they're just rolling downhill like a freight train, no pun intended, given Atlanta, and it's just so hard to stop. And the team specifically, that front four, is so dangerous that that's going to happen a lot this year, I think. I think defensively is where it's different. The one, which is really kind of a zero, right? I mean, it was 4-0. It was a wonderful goal from Carlos Hill late that didn't really change anything against a good New England team. That's where, if you're Atlanta, I think that's where your focus has to be. Gonzalo Pineda was very open with us before the game. We asked him, what do you want different this year? How do you guys take the step? And he said, the attack was okay, right? It's defensively. We have to be better defensively. They think they have the pieces to be better defensively. We'll see. I think the jury's still out on the back line, the new center back pairing specifically. But so far, two games into the season, two goals allowed to two of the best players in the league, right? And against two of the best attacks in the league, at least last year. So far, so good, I think, for them defensively. And that's where, to me, that's where the season's gonna be determined.
Now, Orlando comes in. It's had all sorts of trouble in league games, creating chances, putting the ball in the net. Now, it did score two last night in its Champions League match. What is not working as well for Orlando this season?
Yeah, it's perplexing. It really is, because I thought they'd be back where they were last year. The East is so good, so to say that they would take a step up would be hard, because the only way to go up is a supporter shield from where they finished last year. But they have not started well, obviously. We did their game against Miami that was one of the worst games they've played under Oscar Pereja. And it was surprising, because last year they were the first team and one of the only teams to really step to Miami, to really not be in awe of the talent, the star power, and almost deferential to that star power. We saw a lot of teams, including Atlanta United, in that first game. Right. When they played them in the set, it was Messi's second game in Leagues Cup and group play. And they gave them so much time. And it was not a great performance from Atlanta by any stretch of the imagination. Orlando then came and just took it to them. They lost the game. They were maybe unlucky to, I think, a difficult penalty call against Joseph Martinez, who was on Miami at the time. Messi, I think, should have gotten sent off. Didn't get a second yellow card when he probably deserved it. And they had a late offside call, a light goal disallowed for a very close offside. But they played really well in that game. Then fast forward to this year, and it was the opposite. They gave the ball over in sloppy places. They gave Miami time, and they got destroyed. They didn't look up for it, and that was surprising, because that is so uncharacteristic of Orlando. I think it was better against Minnesota. They lost the game, and Minnesota is kind of these cardiac kids right now of MLS, where they're getting these late goals, but better. And Duncan McGuire scored two goals in that game. But even in CONCACAF Champions Cup play against Tigres, it's 4-2. Pedro Galese makes, I think, two mistakes on two of the goals.
Yeah.
But he also makes two really good saves. And in general, Tigres, if you watch the game, Tigres was the better team by a lot. So Orlando, they've got some question marks to start the season. There's no doubt about it. I thought their midfield last year of Cartagena and Araujo was maybe the best in the league or in that conversation, and they haven't played at that level yet this year. Again, I specifically look at that Miami game where they weren't at that level. And coming into Mercedes-Benz, they're going to be faced with that similar predicament that you are when you go face Messi and Miami, and that you cannot give Almada time. You cannot give Atlanta space to come forward with those front four. And if they do that, it's going to be similar for them, I think. So they've got to figure it out. I think they will. Oscar Pereira is a great coach, but it hasn't been a good start for them.
So how can Orlando hurt Atlanta United, do you think?
Yeah, look, if they go up, right? I think for me, when I, and you've seen Atlanta play at home far more than I have, but when Atlanta gets going and they get a lead, that's when it gets really dangerous, because when they get a lead at home, that field is so expansive. And if they get a lead at home, then the other team's going to, guess has to go for it. And then there's space for Atlanta to come on the break with, for me, in transition, the best, most dangerous front four in MLS. And I'm not sure it's close, to be honest. So if Orlando can get the first goal, then you prevent that. Then you force Atlanta to come at you, and you can be compact and you can defend well. And to me, that's, if I'm any team coming into Mercedes-Benz, right, that's going to be the formula. And that's what Orlando has to do, especially on relatively short rest. I mean, they go Tuesday, Sunday, so that's not terrible. And now they're out of the Champions Cup completely, so they're going to focus all on MLS. So I don't know how much of a factor it'll have, other than they're going to be bummed because they got smashed by Tigres. And they'll really want to take that taste out of their mouth. That could go both ways, right? It could go new start, or it could go kind of a little bit of a hangover from that.
They didn't look as bad as Philadelphia did in their match, but yeah, I think they're going to
go. No, they did not.
A little bit motivated.
Yeah, that's true.
Beat Atlanta United. Getting that first goal is key. Atlanta United, in its franchise history, is just god-awful, has a god-awful record when it gives up the first goal. So let's say that Atlanta United scores first in this game, wins the game. This will be the second time you've seen them. What is the potential of this team, do you think? Is it supporter shield? Is it MLS Cup? Is it simply top four in the East?
I'm high on them. I mean, I think the front four is – in the argument for best in Major League Soccer, possibly at the top of that argument. Any team that has a front four that includes Lionel Messi and Luis Suarez is right. Going to automatically be number one on that list. But Atlanta, to me, is right behind them. And specifically the way they play and the way they play at home. And again, when they get up, because they're better in transition than Miami is. To me, that's Miami right now. That's their big question mark, because they don't have that threat behind, right? And they don't, when they're, if you're an opponent, you can leave that space behind, because there's not really a threat right now on Inter Miami. For Atlanta, you've got those four with John De Silva and Saba on the wings and Yakomakis on the top and Almada running the point. It's so good. So for me, with those front four, the sky is the limit, so to speak. But again, that wasn't the problem last year. And even with Johnny Silva and Saba being midseason additions, even with Yakomakis being limited to 21 starts, and you're hoping you can get a higher than that. He's going to miss some games with Greece, but you're hoping you can get more than that. And he's in the golden boot race. I think he will be. Even with all that, they still score the second most goals in the league, right? So it's the defense. I think they figured out the central midfield. To me, that was, for the past several years, that was the big question mark. Gonzalo Pineda can never really settle on which two to start in that central midfield. And I don't think that's his fault. I just think they didn't have the right pieces and nobody stood out. And it was kind of the same, regardless of what combination he went with. Now with Muyumba and Shalish, theoretically, right, that's there. They've looked good so far together. I think it's been two games. So for me, if that is figured out, and if the defense is actually better, and losing Miles Robinson hurts, right? And again, I think for me, the question is Derek Williams and Steon Gregerson. And if those two guys can be an elite center back pairing in this league, then absolutely. Supporters Shield, MLS Cup, all of it. Atlanta's back, I think. We've got a question in goal as well. In the sense that, you know, Gonzalo Pineda is going with Bregezan to start this season. Is he going to stay with that? Is he going to at some point switch to Josh Cohen? When we talked to him before the game, he kind of said it's going to be an ongoing battle. It's not always the best setup for a team. Goalkeepers can be like quarterbacks, to make a reference to the NFL. If you have two, you have none, right? If you have more than one, you have none. Will that be the case for Atlanta this year? I don't know. Will they settle on Gazan, and will he have a renaissance year? Maybe. If not, will they go to Cohen, and will he kind of be the guy? And maybe, but that's obviously a question early on. Though Gazan's look good so far, right? And that's what you want from him. Yeah.
It's funny how a goalkeeper suddenly looks much better when the defense ahead of him is
exactly
affected him a lot last year, I think.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. And you know, that's where like clean sheets, right? To me, clean sheets isn't a goalkeeper statistic. It's a defense statistic, right? And yes, you're going to have to make a great save here and there. And Gazan saves a penalty in Columbus, which is wonderful. But ultimately, if you're Atlanta, yeah, you don't want him to have to make great saves, right? And control the game, be on the ball, be the dominant team. And then Brad or Josh or Quentin, whoever it is, doesn't have to do as much.
I want to switch to some other MLS topics, but before I do, I need to remind listeners that you can watch all the games on Apple for free this week. So if you're not at the game and you want to hear Jake and Taylor Twellman, it's free this weekend. A little taste of what you could get if you're not already a subscriber. So setting aside Mercedes-Benz Stadium for a second, you've seen, I'm assuming, almost every stadium in Major League Soccer at this point. I have not want to go to St. Louis or Austin. I'll get St. Louis this year, and I haven't seen Minnesota's new stadium, but I've seen all of them except for those. What is your favorite?
So the only one I haven't been to is Minnesota, the new stadium, Allianz. I've been to TCF Bank multiple times, but haven't made it there yet. For me, so I have to say this disclaimer, otherwise people protesting out of my house outside of my house here in Southeast Portland. Providence Park is still, because it is different, because it is unique, because it has this 100-year-old character that no other venue in MLS can replicate or match. For me, there's still something special about it. I know there's turf. If there's grass, I don't think it'd be a question. But there's still something special about Providence Park. And look, I'm talking to Atlanta fans who play on turf every week. So Providence Park would be my answer because it's different. Now, you go to kind of the category of the new stadiums. There are so many wonderful, beautiful venues that have great atmospheres in this league. It's changed. This question 10 years ago would be so easy to answer. You'd be between Portland, Seattle, maybe Toronto when they got good. Yeah. For like best atmosphere, best places to go to a game, right? Now, it's so hard. St. Louis last year to me was the best atmosphere in the league, the best that we've been to. We did several games there. Now look, we did their first ever home game. We did their first game against Sporting Kansas City. We did their playoff series, right? So we're doing these special games, but we also did a couple others. I think, you know, the LAFC, which sure, defending champs, it's a big game, but it's not a rivalry to it. The whole stadium stands for the whole game. They're so locked into the game. They're so smart about the game. They, you know, cheer at the right times or get cheers the wrong way. They react at the right times, right? And they're exasperated at the right times. There's some newer teams in this league, newer soccer cities that you go there and the crowd kind of goes up in a moment that really wasn't very dangerous because I think they're kind of still learning the game. St. Louis is a true soccer town and soccer city, and that atmosphere is incredible. The building's beautiful as well. Mm-hmm. So for me, St. Louis had the best atmosphere in the league last year. Columbus's new building is great. Cincinnati's building is fantastic. It's like Red Bull Arena, but they fill it out, right? And if you've been to Red Bull Arena, you know that building is awesome. And the issue there is getting people to the games, right? Mercedes-Benz, man, okay, we were there last week, and it's just for us, it's such a nice stadium from everything behind the house, right? Back of house is just perfect. And so it's comfortable. It's easy for us. It's gorgeous. And then when it gets full and it gets rocking, it's unparalleled in this league. There's not anywhere else like it. When you get 70,000 in that dome, the roof's closed, Atlanta's flying. I think there's going to be a lot of that this year. Maybe not 70,000, they won't open up the bowl every game, but it was special for us to be there for the home opener. And Atlanta is still, to me, just also similar to kind of Providence Park. It's almost in a category of its own, right? Because of the size of the crowds and just the quality of that stadium. It's one of the best stadiums in the world, right? I mean, that's not hyperbole. Rightfully will be prominently hosting games at the 2026 World Cup.
Portland is also my favorite. People ask me, I love Providence Park. I've not been fortunate enough to go to a game in Europe, but it feels to me like it could be picked up and dropped.
Yeah.
Into, yeah. I don't know, some Central European country or something, and it would just fit right in. That's what it
would. I think so, right? That's the charm of it, right? You know, it's cool. I love that it's 100-year-old stadium, right? Yeah, it's different. It's not like the concourses aren't comfortable. They're tight, you know. Some of the benches are not comfortable. They've been there for, you know, certainly not 100 years, but years and years and years, right?
Right.
It's good. And then they built the new side, right? In 2019, they opened it up, adding five, and those are the premium seats, and there's beautiful club areas. So you've got that if you want it, right. But it's not all that, right? And I like.
All right, we're going to wrap this up with the last two questions. Who is your biggest surprise in the league so far and the, I guess, biggest shock?
Yeah, biggest surprise is Minnesota United, I think, by far, for doing what they've done without a permanent coach in-house, right? Without a permanent coach in the state. And Cameron Knowles, who's somebody I know well, he was an assistant at Portland when I started calling Timbers games back in the day. Very happy for him, and he's clearly done a great job in what was a thankless and difficult gig, right? I mean, the guys could have easily tuned him out knowing that he was going to be an interim coach for like 2 months. It's one thing to be an interim coach, you know, announced in May, and you're going to get the rest of the year. It's another thing to know that your team is in the process of hiring a coach, and the previous interim, Sean McCauley, also a previous Timbers assistant with Cam, those guys are like best friends, you know, leaves to go take a USL championship job at Indy 11. And now Cam's thrust into this role right before the season. Basically, he's got to take him through preseason and who knows how many regular season games, but it's not going to be many. Clearly the team bought into him. Clearly they listened to him. He got them ready to start the season when they had no expectations. Reynoso hasn't played yet. Their best player, one of the best players in the league. And they start the way they have, never giving up, scoring these late goals. To me, that's the surprise of the season. League-wide. And I throw Montreal as like a close second, right? Yeah. Because same thing with starting with six on the road. Now they have 7 points through three games. They beat a Miami team that, yes, was rotated, but they still do it. They still get it done. And you know, Suarez, the game ended with Suarez, Busquets, and Alba on the pitch, and they finished it off. So those two teams would be my surprises. It's early to talk about disappointments, I think, to be honest. Orlando is up there. And New England, I think, right? Two teams. To me, the East is so good, and it's going to be so competitive. And there's not a lot of margin of error because coming into the year, I thought there was a reasonable argument for eight teams to win the East, yeah. Not just make the playoffs, win the East. And you couldn't say that about the West at all. And so now when you've got the Red Bulls looking really good, right? And Montreal looking really good, and DC looking really good. And Toronto looking good, right? So these are teams that didn't make the playoffs. Red Bulls made the playoffs, but that I wouldn't have put in that top, in that eight. The eight, I would have put the top seven plus, of last year plus Miami. Those would have been my eight. So now you've got these teams, and Miami didn't make the playoffs last year, right? So now you've got these teams that didn't make the playoffs that are doing well. So if you're New England and Orlando and you're starting like this, you could be in trouble of missing the playoffs in the East because it's going to be that good this year. So, I think both teams will figure it out. I think the talent's there, but yeah, the rosters are there. But for me, that's the biggest disappointment. I would not include Seattle in that because of their injuries, even though they've been off to a slow start, but they've just been without their core, their spine, and Brian Schmetzer they'll be fine. But yeah, that's where I'd go so far, but it's so early and I can't wait to see how it all evolves.
Yep. It's going to be a lot of fun. All right, Jake, tell people how they can find you.
Yeah, sure. Well, primarily, you can listen to me on MLS Season Pass on Apple TV, calling games with Taylor Twellman. As Doug, as you mentioned, every game this weekend is free, including this Atlanta-Orlando game. So all you need is the Apple TV app, or you can just go to tv.apple.com in your browser, right? Super easy. You sign in just like you'd sign into any website. You don't need to pay anything, and you can watch every game this weekend for free. Secondarily, social media at Jake Zivin on Twitter, on Instagram. Yeah, pretty simple. I'm not a huge social media guy, but I'm there.
All right. I appreciate it, man.
Thanks, Doug. Great to spend the time.
And I want to thank Kirk for setting that up for me. And again, I want to remind you, you can follow me on Twitter at Doug Robertson AJC, on Facebook at Atlanta United News Now. I hope that you'll consider subscribing to the AJC. Just go to AJC.com/start if you're a new subscriber, We have that special deal I mentioned earlier, less than $2 a week for the rest of your life. You get everything that we cover, that we're covering the whole state. You get all of your Georgia Bulldogs, your Braves, your Georgia Tech, your Georgia State, your Kennesaw State, your politics, your local culture, your food and dining, your local news, your municipality news, all of that. AJC.com/start. Now on to the best moves feedback. The first is from Greg. He said his best moves made by the front office were drafting Miles Robinson and Julian Gressel. He says it's a great move when you draft a top 11 player and a very solid contributor. Yep, I remember that draft. I was there. The workouts were in, it was Carson, California. And the draft was at LA Live there. They called Miles Robinson. He was the second pick. He was not the first center back to be expected to be taken. Actually, there was a guy from Notre Dame who was supposed to be the top center back. After watching him and the combine and the team drills, at least to me, it was pretty clear this guy was not going to cut it in Major League Soccer. He was slow. He wasn't winning aerial duels. The only reason I could think of that he was considered number one was because he had Notre Dame on his shirt. But the team got Robinson, followed that by getting Julian Gressel, which was, again, another surprise. He wasn't expected to go until around, like, I think it was 15 to 18 on a lot of the mock drafts. But Carlos and Gerardo Martino really liked his versatility and his intelligence. Obviously proved to be a great pick, both of them. Greg's next is Thiago Almada, which he said is self-explanatory. Signing Yurgo Chakamakis. He says Joseph leaves, but is replaced with a big personality leader and effective goal scorer. And then he continues with Eric Rometty, a great mid-year pickup and a championship run. Yeah, Eric Rometty that year was fantastic. He was the guy who was tasked with shutting down the other team's best midfielder, and he did it very, very well. The next year, he played. He was decent the next year, and then 2020, I don't know what happened, but he just kind of fell off. Good guy, though. Good guy. He was a great player for Atlanta United. He continues, the initial roster, Joseph and Almiron were great. Chemistry and glue with Parkey, Lornowitz, Garza, LGP, Kratz, just an all-around great roster that we did not come to fully appreciate until years later. He continues the draft trade to get Andrew Gutman to replace Bello. Those were some of his. Sean says best moves were Mercedes-Benz Stadium. It's a cheat code to have such a large and high-quality stadium. It's not perfect, but it's definitely a top-five soccer stadium in the world. He says getting Darlington Nagbe in a trade from Portland, I think that put the team over the top for a great run. Rick's feedback. This is two things. It says, first, I wonder how you assess Greg Berhalter's selection of only two MLS players for upcoming CONCACAF matches. I've got no problem with it. I think it was good that he got Miles Robinson, who to me has been the best defender in Major League Soccer for the past 5 years. Of course, you know, he also calls in three players who aren't playing for their teams. Matt Turner, Ethan Horvath, two goalkeepers, and Gio Reyna, who... Anybody who is pro Reyna and anti Berhalter can really just shut up at this point, because he called him in despite Reyna playing less than one half for his new team. It you know, the skepticism that the pro Reyna people have that none of this is Gio's fault is laughable at this point. But he gets called into the U.S. men's national team for what reason, I do not know. But those are my takeaways on that. Anyway, he continues. On my savviest moves feature, Rick says, I think luring Nagbe deserves a spot in your list. Without him, we probably don't win the MLS championship. Well, I don't know if that's true or not. He says, other savvy moves were negative, getting rid of Heinze and De Boer. The latter had the misfortune of replacing Martino. His Dutch-style possession game that depended heavily on advanced skills and soccer vision was the opposite of Martino's creative open style that prized individual brilliance. Also, neither Heinze nor De Boer understood the Latino and South American minds of the majority of our players. I got to really disagree with a great deal of that. First off, De Boer no longer had Miguel Almiron, which Tata had, which makes individual brilliance that much easier when you have a guy who can flip defense to offense in a snap. I think Gabriel Heinze understood the South American mindset. He is from South America. Frank De Boer understood the South American mindset. He was just not a very good communicator, which was part of the problem. he tried to adjust the team to play based upon the talent that he had. And he didn't have Almiron. And then the front office, you know, let go of Gressel, let go of Viaba, let go of LGP, traded some of those guys. DeBoer did not. DeBoer told me point blank, I didn't want to see those guys go. They're some of the best players we had. And he still did the best that he could. And anyway, when I do the worst moves, two of those might be in there. Ricks continues, your most interesting choice was to rank Almiron Cell as the most savvy move of all. It was a little odd, but the way United advertised and marketed Almiron to Europe was impressive. It illustrated for naive Americans that an exceptional player was, after all, a business asset. And it bore fruit even if many were miffed to see it happen. Hard to put a dollar value on love, and Almiron was loved. He's Newcastle's most popular player, just as he was Atlanta's. Thank you for your work on behalf of the local team's place in the world's number one sport. I don't know if Almiron is Newcastle's most popular player anymore. I've seen a lot of negative tweets and vibes about him. He's not having, statistically, a great year for the Magpies. I saw some people down on him earlier this year. Y'all know my issue with Almiron from this summer's EPL match at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Or not EPL, but friendly match at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Yeah, so if you haven't read my article about ranking Atlanta United's best moves, you can Google it. Doug Robertson, Atlanta United best moves, Miguel Almiron. It'll pop up. And you can read the other four that I included. Again, next week is other professional athletes that would make great soccer players. Some of it is my choices are because of obvious physical gifts, and others are because I like the idea or I like the theory. It'll come out on Wednesday. It should be hopefully in Thursday's paper. And then I'm looking for suggestions for the week after that. So if you have something you want me to rank, I've got some in already, but I'm always looking for more. Please feel free to email me, DROBERSON at AJC.com. I'm also trying to find ideas for my son's high school graduation gift. If you have a good graduation gift idea that's not related to Atlanta United merchandise, send it my way. I would love to hear from you. Please tell your friends about our show. Please give us a rating and a review on Spotify and Apple. That's what helps us grow the podcast. Again, AJC.com/start if you want to be a new subscriber. Hug your loved ones. Communicate with your loved ones. Be empathetic. Strive for awareness. This is Southern Fried Soccer. Y'all take care.
Ocean breeze, tropical beach, piña colada. You can buy an air freshener to make your car smell like you're in an oceanside paradise. Or, better yet, you can point your car toward Daytona Beach and come experience the real thing. Visit DaytonaBeach.com to discover all there is to see, do, and enjoy along the world's most famous beach, Daytona Beach, Florida. Beach on.
In Atlanta, one voice has stood out for over four decades. An AJC original, The Monica Pearson Show.
Let's talk about how you got to ESPN.
Revealing interviews.
You are known as America's doctor, but I want to know who you were before that.
When you have a different name, you have different color skin, it can be tough.
With Atlanta's most famous faces as you've never seen them before.
I'm telling my story. This is the American dream.
The Monica Pearson Show, streaming now on AJC.com.